The following program is brought to you by Total Theater Online. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff or management of WGBB. You're listening to the station that serves your community, 1240 WGBB. And now it's time for Dave's Gone By with David Lefkowitz.
There goes the neighborhood. Welcome, everybody, to Dave's Gone By, an hour of talk radio, comedy, and music brought to you every week by Total Theater on AM 1240 WGBB Freeport and live streaming on davesgoneby.com. This is our 84th episode titled Contenda, a reference, of course, to the late Marlon Brando. He died last Friday. I know it seems so long ago already, probably because he didn't get a two-week funeral like President Reagan. But if Brando wasn't the greatest actor of his generation, he probably was the most exciting, most visceral, the most iconic. James Dean burned out too fast. Gregory Peck was too wooden. Tony Perkins too creepy. Pacino was too feverish. Hoffman too mannered. And Nicholson didn't hit his stride until the 1970s. Now, granted, if the kid who played Urkel had been acting in the late 50s, I think Brando would have had a run for his money. No, but love him or hate him, love him and hate him, Marlon Brando made his mark on both acting and the national psyche. So, we'll be branding this episode with Brando, including a more in-depth look at his ups and downs later on in the program, as well as a little skit about how his work in Apocalypse Now can be imitated but never equaled. And that's just part of what you'll hear if you stick around from now till 8 o'clock. We also have the news gone by, our sardonic look at current events, weekend update style, even though it's a weekday. Stories tonight include Boy Scout Big Gulps, hospital hijinks, White Castle couture, a mendacious museum, a singing Secretary of State, a dead doob, and a very, very, very long organ. Plus, a brand new weekly segment from our sponsor, Total Theater, Inside Broadway, a quick way of finding out what's happening this week on the stages of New York. As I think I mentioned before on the show, when I was first toying with the idea for a radio program, it was more than 2 years ago, I struggled to find what was right for me. Much as I love zany comedy, especially with an edge and the need to push the envelope content-wise, I didn't want a morning zoo thing. I didn't want raunchy stupidity just for its own sake. I wanted raunchy stupidity for my sake. No, but while I was considering what kind of radio program to do and to try and market and syndicate, the other option besides comedy was a theater show. Not the newest idea in the universe. It's been done before. But I thought it would be cool to mix Broadway music, interviews, news about the theater, maybe some quizzes. In fact, it was something I had been working on at my last place of business. I was kind of high up in a well-known theater-related publishing company, one that shall remain nameless. They were trying to get into the radio business, and they made a deal with a sponsor, and the head of the company asked me, directed me, to help hire the right person to put together a Broadway radio show. And I was like, dude, I am the right person, and set about trying to prove that, and putting together outlines and a sample program, and really showing how I thought it could be done. Anyway, the firm that I had worked for, and dreamed for, and put my sweat equity into, hired someone else, and took some of my ideas, and I quit a few months later. And afterwards, I admit, I was a little soured on the idea of just a theater show, especially since I still wanted to do comedy. I still wanted to play music, not just show tunes, but rock songs, novelty numbers, whatever felt right. And that's how Dave's Gone By came about. I realized I would be hemmed in by just doing one thing. But if I put together the show I wanted to do, I could do everything. I could still come out with a show that was of a piece, that had its own unified style and sound and reason for being. Nevertheless, long-time listeners to Dave's Gone By know that theater has always had a special place here. I've done countless Broadway and off-Broadway reviews. I've discussed theater with a bunch of drama critics, including Jonathan Kalb, Iris Dorbian, Jeff Goodman, Charlie Gross, Richmond Shepherd, Jamie Lieberman, all great guests. I've had actors and directors on, and I've played musical selections from everything from Bells Are Ringing and Fiddler on the Roof to Sunday in the Park with George and Avenue Q. Absolutely, theater remains close to my heart and a vital part of this show. So, it occurred to me, what better way to advertise and promote the sponsor of this show, Total Theater, than with a short segment every week devoted to the New York stage? Not reviews. I'll still be doing those every couple of weeks as I see stuff and want to share my thoughts. This will be news, gossip, stuff you'll want to know if you have even the faintest interest at all in the bright lights of Broadway. It's called Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater and its marvelous magazine, Performing Arts Insider. That's where all the information is, and I'll tell you more about that when we go inside Broadway in just a little bit. But first, we gotta get the curtain up on this episode of Dave's Gone By. It is Thursday, July 8th, 2004, and I am your host, Dave Lefkowitz, radio personality, theater critic, journalist, humorist, and rebel with a cause. Yes, guys and dolls, we've got a wild one for you. Well, not that wild, but if you're worried about kids listening, remember that this show is rated DGB-13, the Dave's Gone By equivalent of PG-13. It ain't Last Tango in Paris, but sometimes this ugly American freshman has a few young lions to burn. And we'll get it all started in just 1 minute, but first, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. Print it, copy it, send it as a gift. All that and more at Hewlett Minuteman Press. Full-service printer, family-owned and operated since 1975. Photocopying, printing, invitations, engraved gifts. Minuteman, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett. Call 516-569-5577, 569-5577, or on the web at hewlett.minutemanpress.com. Mention Dave's Gone By and get a special price. You know who's never eaten at the Tandoor Grill? Osama bin Laden. And you want to know why? Two reasons. One, he's an idiot. He doesn't realize how tasty their appetizers, main courses, and Indian breads can be. Two, he must be living in a cave, because for months I've been telling people 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center with a menu at TandoorGrill.com. Osama doesn't even know you can get 10% off by mentioning Dave's Gone By. And you know what? Don't even tell him about the Tandoor Grill. He'll never know it's India-licious. Inside Broadway, brought to you by Total Theater and Performing Arts Insider, your everything theater guide. The big news on Broadway this week is that there still is a Broadway this week. After breaking for the holiday, Actors Equity and the Theater League went back to the bargaining table on Tuesday, and as of this afternoon, they were still trying to carve out an agreement to avert a potential actors' strike. The issues include money, of course, and health care, but assumedly the real 800-pound gorilla is touring. More and more, producers have been turning to cheaper, non-union tours, even for big, first-run musicals just out of New York. For obvious reasons, Equity, the actors' union, sees non-equity tours as a terrible blow to its members' job security, wages, and power. But Broadway producers, faced with skyrocketing costs across the board, are starting to feel that cutting expenses and union salaries and requirements is the only way to keep road shows profitable. So, negotiations continue. Meanwhile, shows on and off Broadway are up and running. If you have tickets reserved or are planning something for the weekend, I suggest checking the Equity website, actorsequity.org, before you head to the theater. In other Broadway news from Total Theater, strike or no strike, two shows are closing this weekend, Jumpers at the Brooks Atkinson Theater and A Raisin in the Sun at the Royale. Jumpers got some good reviews for its inventive staging and performances, but didn't really catch fire at the box office. Raisin in the Sun was a big hit that recouped its investment in just 2 months, and that was before Felicia Rashad and Audra McDonald both won Tonys. But Reason is drying up. July 11th, because all those famous people in it, including Sean Puffy Combs, could only sign on for a few weeks. Tickets are virtually sold out for Reason, very available for jumpers, and you have just a couple more days to catch two well-received off-Broadway shows. The first is Afterbirth, The Further Adventures of Kathy and Moe. That's at the Second Stage Theater. It's an evening of comedy sketches featuring Kathy Najimy and Moe Gaffney. They both went on to TV and film careers since the original Kathy and Moe show debuted in 1986. And it's last weekend for Finian's Rainbow, a concert staging of a 1947 classic at the Irish Repertory Theater. It's been a big hit for them, thanks to some nice reviews and audiences who yearn to hear such Yip Harburg and Burton Lane chestnuts as Look to the Rainbow, Old Devil Moon, and How Are Things in Glacamora. And that's how things are on and off Broadway this week. For much more theater news and information, visit TotalTheater.com and subscribe to their publication, Performing Arts Insider. Everything you need to know about Broadway and off, cabaret and dance, rumors and reviews. It's Performing Arts Insider, available by subscription, 516-295-1511, 516-295-1511, or visit TotalTheater.com. Coming up in the weeks ahead on Inside Broadway, Sondheim's Frogs, a musical Dracula, and the Summer Fringe Festivals. Until then, look, look, look to the rainbow, and to TotalTheater.com. Hey, Dave's Gone By listeners, if you like hearing me, you'll love reading me even more. So hurry and get my book, Marriage, Babies, and the End of the World, filled with hilarious plays that were performed in New York, like King Solomon the Wise and Blind Date. 232 pages of Pure Dave, only $20 hardcover, $12 trade paperback. To get your copy, call 516-295-1511 or visit my website.
On the radio, ooh, ooh, on the radio, ooh.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Nothing. I'm just so jazzed about the shows WGBB plays on the weekends. There's more to the station than Dave's Gone By.
What, like a single show with Bonnie D. Graham?
Right. Long Island's Dating, Friday nights at 6 o'clock. Interviews, advice, it's fun.
I don't know, I'd rather hear music.
Well, then you should tune in to the Mr. Redman Music Show.
Mr. Who?
Mr. Redman. He plays all these unsigned Long Island rock bands every Saturday night from 7:30 to 9.
Mm.
He even has a top 10 countdown.
Is he funny?
Well, he tries to be.
Because the guys after him, Mikey and Jimmy, they're pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, they do a comedy team zoo kind of thing. The Mikey and Jimmy Show, 9 to 10 on Saturdays.
What about Sunday nights? Anything good on then?
Like, duh, Joe Salzone, 7 o'clock.
Ah, he's that political conservative guy. What is he, like, 20?
Yeah, still young enough to have an open mind and a sense of humor.
Mm.
So you see, four different shows for you to listen to on the weekend. Long Island's Dating, Fridays at 6.
Mr. Redman, Saturdays at 7:30, followed by Mikey and Jimmy at 9.
And Joe Salzone, 7 p.m. on Sundays.
Well, that's a lot of good shows.
Sing it with me now.
On the radio, ooh, on the radio, ooh, on the radio.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Thursday, July 8th. 2004. Time for the news gone by, a look at events of the past week from a rebellious Rabelaisian perspective. In post-holiday news, I hope you all had a good 4th of July and nobody got too drunk, nobody had a grilling accident, nobody did anything dumb with fireworks, and normally I am against fireworks. I think they're too dangerous to be worth any enjoyment they might bring. But I have to say, I found this story pretty cool. One of the most popular firecrackers of this past Independence Day was one shaped like Osama bin Laden. When you light the cone-shaped bottle rocket, which has a caricature of bin Laden's face on it, blood-red flames fly up, there's a minute of screeching, and then two shots blow his head off. And if that isn't cool enough, bin Laden comes as part of a quartet, the Exploding Terrorist Heads 4-Pack. No joke, receiving the same treatment as Osama are Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, and Yasser Arafat. Yeah, I'd like a couple of those. Anyway, much as it would be great to say that these combustible fellas come out of some factory in Dubuque, the exploding terrorists are actually made in China, and some parents have complained that blowing the heads off human-shaped toys sends the wrong message during this era of internet decapitations. However, other folks view these mini-mortars as a way of venting aggression against our enemies. Most troubling are the massive orders for these exploding Arab fireworks from Palestinian children. I guess they want to bring them in for show and tell about their daddy's last job. Do a song and dance now and then, but Secretary of State Colin Powell did that literally last Friday in Indonesia. It was at the end of a major conference devoted to Asian security. For the finale, diplomats traditionally take part in a zany musical review to loosen everybody up. For example, the Moscow delegation sent a woman with a Russian flag running around the dinner tables while Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov sang Yellow Submarine. I am not kidding about this. And the minister from India read a poem, and then his whole delegation burst into song. I have to say, our boy, old Colin, he was the winner on showmanship. Dressed in a hard hat and construction clothes and flanked by a policeman, a cowboy, and an Indian chief, Colin Powell sang a parody version of YMCA. Now, though Powell is no John Ashcroft in the songbird department, it was not an embarrassment by any stretch. Unlike the diplomat from South Korea, who dressed up like Boy George and sang to North Korea, "Do You Really Want to Hurt Me?" or the foreign minister from Poland, who dressed up like Britney Spears and sang "Oops, I Did It Again." He wasn't bad, but he was 6,000 miles away giving a speech at Parliament. Turning to the war on terrorism, in Iraq, a masked group of militants is threatening to kill Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the guy who beheaded Nicholas Byrd. The men, shown on video carrying rocket-propelled grenades and other weapons, say they will slaughter Zarqawi in cold blood unless he leaves the country. Which puts us in this weird situation of watching a bunch of Arab terrorists threatening to blow up an Arab terrorist. I mean, what do you say to that besides, you know, thank you? Good luck with your aim, and hope it's a suicide mission. In political news, the wait is over. The choice has been made. Democratic hopeful John Kerry has selected his vice presidential running mate for the 2004 elections. It is, of course, Danny DeVito. DeVito, a surprise pick, has been a Hollywood actor and director for decades, best known for the TV sitcom Taxi and for his marriage to The New York Post. Why? Edwards? Really? Never mind. Another ex-presidential hopeful also in the news, Al Sharpton, who returns to the public eye this fall. He has been chosen to host a new reality series for Spike TV called I Hate My Job. 8 men quit occupations they loathe, and are given 3 months to find their dream careers. Asked why he liked the program, Sharpton replied, quote, "I fully support the message. If you want to change, get up and do it," unquote. Asked if he thought it was easy to find a good job, Sharpton said, "What's a job?" Hey, remember a few years ago there was a movie called Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead? Well, if you're looking for things to do in Denver when you're almost dead, I would suggest avoiding Denver Health Medical Center. Recently, five paramedics and 12 other workers, there's the siren in the background, five paramedics and 12 other workers were let go for abusing and bullying the patients. And just last week, Gary Bradford, another patient/victim, was brought there unconscious after being mugged outside a gay bar. Hospital employees treated him, but one of them also grabbed his digital camera and took a picture of the guy's naked genitals while he was knocked out. Bradford's lawyer said, quote, "They disrobed him and put him on display with people coming out of the emergency room to see him. Then somebody gets the bright idea to take a photo of him and leave the photo on the camera. They did it to humiliate him," unquote. The employees were fired and Bradford is suing, although he did say he was touched by the support of his friends, all of whom recognized him just from his photo. Speaking of ethics, there's nothing unusual about seeing Boy Scouts selling lemonade to raise a little money, but a troop of scouts in Salt Lake City, Utah, is selling the beverage at $250 a glass in order to raise $14 million. Now, they're doing it because a different scout outfit in Utah accidentally set a very destructive fire, and a judge awarded the government damages to the tune of $14 million. Hoping to do their part to pay the debt, Troop 347 of Fruit Heights has been offering motorists fresh squeezed lemonade, $1 a sip, $3 a small glass, and $250 for a 16-ounce big gulp. Sales started slowly. In fact, in 2 hours, they made about $66. But hopes are high nonetheless, especially since buyers for the American military have ordered 10,000 big gulps because, well, the Army can never resist a bargain. In business news, last Thursday, ING, the Dutch financial group, hailed the 10th birthday of its telephone banking service. The telephone division, which prides itself on, quote, availability, speed, and ease of use, celebrated by not picking up the phones all day. Silly as it sounds, at least the work stoppage was less problematic than last month's week-long anniversary in Krakow of the Polish Ambulance Corps. In food news, the Associated Press reports that the latest trend in teenage apparel is T-shirts with a logo of White Castle on them. That's right, the 83-year-old fast food chain, famous for its paper-thin meat squares on baby-sized buns, has become a big-selling fashion item everywhere from Filene's Basement to Lord & Taylor. Experts in the trade say the nearly $3 million in sales of White Castle merchandise is fueled by young people's desire for things retro. They also like the authenticity of the shirts, which not only show the familiar castle wall with the blue writing on it, but they come with a matching set of briefs, pre-stained a dark brown, just as they would be after a typical White Castle binge. Also in fast food news, very, very fast food, in fact, congratulations to Takeru Kobayashi. For the fourth year in a row, he won the Nathan's Famous Hot Dog Eating Contest in Coney Island. The 132-pound Kobayashi, nicknamed Tsunami, wolfed down 53.5 Frankfurters in 12 minutes. That is a new world record, beating his own 2002 mark of 50.5. How does he do it? Snapping the dogs in two before swallowing them, which greatly reduces the need for chewing. And Kobayashi was not the only one setting records at Nathan's last Sunday. 105-pound Sonia the Black Widow Thomas became the record holder for women, gulping down 32 wieners. She did not win any trophies, but she did get pelted with phone numbers from every man watching. In education news, farewell to mathematician Joseph Doob, who pioneered the study of probability theory. Doob died last week of liver cancer at age 94, and oddly enough, he never saw it coming. The tiny Nebraska town of Dannebrog now has a museum to put it on the map. It's the National Liars Hall of Fame. Creator Roger Welch, a former comic essayist on CBS's Sunday Morning, founded the repository to honor, quote, the art of prevarication and metric mendacity. The Hall of Fame collection includes such wonders as an electric nose picker, a box of golf balls that are said to be as big as hail, a packet of cow seeds, so you can grow your own cows, and a fly swatter with a hole in it, complete with a certificate of approval from the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Flies. Curator Gaylord Mickelson suggests that tour groups of 500 or more should call ahead, especially since the exhibits occupy only 3 shelves in a room the size of a kitchenette. Still, visitors have come from all over the world to see the two-headed hammer and the gun with a divider inside it so you can kill 2 rabbits at once. Roger Welch began the Liars Hall of Fame in 1986, getting the idea when he visited a local tavern and saw that it had a wall of U.S. presidents. The owner told him, quote, "Washington never told a lie, Johnson never told the truth, and Nixon didn't know the difference." Well, speaking of presidents, George Bush was then asked whether he thought he belonged in the Liars Hall of Fame. Bush immediately said no, which prompted onlookers to burst into applause and say, hey, he's really good. I love stories about poop. It isn't a true news gone by without at least one story involving poo-poo or excretory functions. And this week, we get a crap load from Italy. The mayor of Treviso, a high-class tourist town north of Venice, has banned dogs from the main street and piazzas. 2/3 of the local population support the canine restriction as a way of cutting down canine caca. Less enamored of the law are the dogs themselves, one of whom said, quote, "Can we please go down another street?" In musical news, Bruce Springsteen, The Grateful Dead, The Ring Cycle. Now these guys ain't got nothing on the Church of Halberstadt in Berlin, Germany. After all, what is a 4 or 5 hour concert compared to a concert that's designed to last 639 years? Back on September 5th, 2001, a private foundation organized a public concert of a 20-minute work by avant-garde classical composer John Cage. Originally written for piano and then transcribed for organ, Cage called the composition Organ 2 ASLSP. The title stands for Organ Squared as Slow as Possible. Well, the foundation decided to take that as literally as possible, so they built an organ specifically for the concert, with keys being held down by weights, and instructions were given for new pipes to be fitted in as needed over the years. And I do mean years. In planning the Halberstadt concert, organizers and music experts agreed on the piece being stretched to 639 years. That's how many years it's been since the building of the Halberstadt's first organ in 1361. And as I said, the concert started on September 5th, 3 years ago. Now, since the first section of John Cage's Organ Squared as Slow as Possible starts with silence, all visitors to the church heard for the first year and a half was air. It wasn't until February 2003 that any actual notes were played. And just last week, big excitement, 2 new notes were added. But don't get carried away. They're going to be taken away in March of 2006. Foundation executive George Bondaval told the Associated Press, the concert is not just a stunt. It has, quote, a philosophical background in the hectic times in which we live, to find calm through the slowness. And in 639 years, maybe they will only have peace, unquote. Hard to argue with the sentiment or the whole absurdist event. I love it. Although, assuming there's still a Germany or a Europe or an Earth still standing in 2640, what do you want to bet they get to the end of the concert and there's 20,000 stoned androids holding up cigarette lighters and shouting for an encore? But I don't blame them. If I could keep my organ going that long, I'd be shouting too. And that's the news gone by for July 8th, 2004. Please send your comments, opinions, and White Castle thongs to Dave's Gone By, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. People have been listening to this show all over the world. They tune in on the internet at davesgoneby.com, sometimes in the middle of the night, some in the early afternoon, depending on the time zone, and that's really great. I'm touched that so many people are checking the show out. But it's even more fun for me when I have personal contact with fans and listeners. So please, email me, davesgoneby@aol.com. Or snail mail, davesgoneby, P.O. Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. I reserve the right to read your letters on the air, name withheld upon request, after vetting it with the CIA for hidden terrorist codes, of course. I do read everything, and I respond to as much as I can, so send letters, postcards, packages, and bundles, but please, no cow seeds. Not today, not tomorrow, not heifer. Back after this.
Do you know how easy and inexpensive it is to advertise on Dave's Gone By? You don't? Well, hey, it's even easier to find out. You can run a 30 or 60 second ad or sponsor one of the segments on this show or the whole show. Just go to our website, hometown.aol.com/Dave's Gone By, to see the rate sheet or call 516-295-1511. Bring your message to my audience. Advertise on Dave's Gone By.
You are Marlon Brando.
And he was Marlon Brando. Marlon died last Friday, July 2nd. He was 80 years old and not in very good shape for a long, long time. I guess God finally made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Here's some basic factual stuff about him before we get into examining his life and career, warts and all, positives and negatives. Well, first of all, he was born, believe it or not, Marlon Brando Jr. That was his dad's name, and nicknamed Bud. He was of Dutch-Irish stock and had alcoholic parents who left him alone a lot, which I guess kind of explains a lot. Especially since in later life he was married and divorced three times, or actually he was divorced twice and annulled once, and through that all, he had 9 children. Well, 8 left, I guess. According to the Internet Movie Database, he worked as an elevator operator at a department store. This was obviously before he made it big. And he quit that job after 4 days because he got embarrassed calling out the lingerie floor. Sounds apocryphal to me, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it was the 50s, and he was already, I guess, a strange kid, and he had that dichotomy of being a complete, you know, nutty sort of weird perv, and very, very shy, and probably very prudish and weird about women and sex and all that. Anyway, I mean, adding further fuel to the rumor over the course of his career, and this, I guess, rumor hits every attractive male star in Hollywood, true or not. There was always the potential gay thing, because Brando was very physically beautiful, and he was the roommate of actor Wally Cox, best known for playing Mr. Peepers. And leaving aside any puns any of us might make on the name Wally Cox, Cox was a semi-closeted, you know, very nerdy, bespectacled gay fellow, and of all people to room with, Marlon Brando. And there was a sexual ambiguity about him, and he certainly became a gay icon from the leather outfit and the attitude that he had in The Wild One. In fact, scenes from that movie, The Wild One, were used in the seminal film, no pun intended, Scorpio Rising, which was a landmark in gay cinema and independent film in general. And weirdly enough, Brando's last role, the last thing he did for a major studio that completed, was a gay character in The Score, the Frank Oz movie. And what's funny is, as ever with late-era Brando films, he had issues with the director. At one point, he barred Frank Oz from the set and called him Miss Piggy. There was also that moment he kissed Larry King on the mouth. Well, actually, I guess if Brando had been gay, that would have turned him back. But seriously, Marlon Brando died just a day after news reports had him being broke and living in a one-room bungalow. So I don't know where that all came from, the timing on that. But did you hear that rumor, too, or a book came out saying that he's been destitute and that all these legal problems and defending his son who shot his girlfriend's boyfriend and all this stuff just depleted his finances? And I kind of believe it, but I kind of don't, because he was Brando. He could walk up to any producer, or call them, call any studio, and say, hey, I'd like to appear in your film for 10 minutes, and please pay me $3 million. You know, and they would. I think that's what he made for the score, and everybody remembers the big deal about how much he was paying for Apocalypse Now for just being the last part of that movie. So, I don't know, maybe he had huge, crushing debt, but if he did three movies in the course of a year, he could still afford, you know, a penthouse on Park Avenue. Well, you know, as much as Brando is great and is fascinating to watch and is exciting on film, I guess I can't really feel towards him as an actor and as an icon the way maybe the last generation did. He wasn't from quite my generation. I mean, The Godfather was, but not when he really came to the fore in Streetcar and Wild One. And it's hard to imagine what it must have been like, what his presence must have felt like, with that energy, that machismo, that anger, the unpredictability, and his making the Actors Studio mumbling as a choice. I mean, not Actors Studio, the, you know, the new bearded guy on TV, but way back when with Strasberg and those people, talking like this and forcing you to listen to what you're saying. It was an elegant snarl. And also, one of the good things that he did, he proved that you could pick and choose movies. This was after sort of the studio era, when all the big stars, like Henry Fonda and Jimmy Stewart, I mean, they were sort of at the mercy of what the studio was telling them to do. Brando came of age when the actor had more of the power and could pick and choose from studios, but he just had to get the right roles. And he did. Once he had established himself and had done some of what the studio asked him to, he picked things that were way off the charts and independent and foreign, like Gino Pontecorvo's political film Burn and working with Bertolucci on Last Tango in Paris. At the same time, and Brando has said this himself, he was addicted to money. So when it came time to decide whether to do Superman and, you know, Christopher Columbus the movie, he took the paycheck and ran. I guess, in retrospect, considering that maybe he was living in a bungalow at the end, maybe he should have stayed independent. Hard to say. Anyway, the thing that I really wanted to get into about Brando all in this is that he probably was, in some weird way, manic or schizophrenic or something, because he was so dichotomous in everything that he did. So he would be, especially in the early years, the sexy hunk that every girl wanted, you know, physically beautiful and could, and was the dream of all women. And yet, if anybody has heard or went to see the Elaine Stritch solo at Liberty, which is on CD, and I think they've also filmed it, she talks about her experience when she was just starting out and come to New York to be an actress, and being at the Actors Studio with Marlon Brando and having a date with him. Well, I won't recount the whole thing, but it was not a pleasant experience, and there was an expectation at the end of that evening, and he was sweet and charming at one moment and really rather crude and a little bit weird and almost sick at other points. And luckily, I mean, it ended okay for her, and he ended up apologizing years later, but that was this weird thing about him. When he won the Oscar, and then he sent Sasheen Littlefeather to the Oscars. Now, that sort of seemed like a very hip thing to do, to not go to this most important night for all the Hollywood industry and use that time that he would have had to make a real political point about the treatment of Native Americans. Except Sasheen Littlefeather didn't exist. It was a made-up name for some actress, and it was more of a goof than anything else, and it just got him ridicule. And then later on in his career, when, you know, he wasn't physically beautiful anymore, or at least not in the same way, and they tried to have a comeback, and he did. In the 1990s, when he was already just sort of this fat, bloated, whatever he was, and he did The Freshman, delightful, affectionate parody, very fun film with Matthew Broderick and Penelope Ann Miller, very smart, clever comedy. And remember the ice skating scene? Brando on ice skates, and he's well overweight, but he's still so graceful? Okay, wonderful. That could have been like the whole next level of his career, except, idiot, he starts trashing the film and the director in the publicity tour, saying how it's a bad film, and the guy couldn't direct, and it wasn't funny, and he didn't like Matthew Broderick. what was in his head, who knows? He was Brando. And then there's that famous moment when I kind of turned off him. He went on to Larry King in 1996, and he blamed Hollywood Jews for movie stereotypes. And he was being pretty rough. He was saying because, you know, the media is owned by Jews, yada, 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 and they put out the black stereotypes and all these things. You know, listening back to the transcript, he was sort of making some good points, but also being very, not putting them in the right way. And then people forgot that his second role in the theater when he was coming up was in Ben Hecht's A Flag Is Born. And in that, he proselytized against the world silence during the Holocaust and for a Jewish homeland. And he did this not only in that play, but he was part of this whole group that went around making speeches and doing tours that were pro-Israel and warning the world and saying, you know, where were you during the Holocaust? So it was a very, you know, very hard to pin down, which is what he was all about. People who saw Brando on stage probably remember him best for A Streetcar Named Desire. And if you're going to do Brando imitations, Don Corleone has long surpassed, you know, Stella as the parody of choice. But for me, the most unforgettable performance was on the waterfront, him playing Terry Molloy, a kid out of Palookaville with 10 different chips on his shoulder. But unlike The Wild One or Rebel Without a Cause, it wasn't just misdirected energy and antipathy. And unlike the later roles, where he was just the slow, lumbering icon, quiet, fascinating, compelling, but not visceral, in Waterfront he was powerful and thrilling and sympathetic and scary. And I think it's fitting that we both remember Brando as a beautiful, strong young man and a fat, lumbering pig, as someone very graceful and charming, and also someone very crude and almost stupid. That's the dual nature of him. And I know this is going to sound like a weird segue, but that dichotomy is captured, oddly enough, in a Neil Young song, one that he did off the Rust Never Sleeps collection called Pocahontas. And the tune, like Brando's life, is a weird mix of sincerity and showbiz, determination and complacency, fear and disgust, and the embracing of kindness mixed with strangeness. So Marlon Brando, farewell, dead at age 80. He wasn't just a contender, he was the champ.
This is terrible.
What?
There are 168 hours in a week, but Days Gone By is only on 1 hour long.
I know, I'm just on Thursday night.
But that's not enough!
Why don't you get my CDs?
CDs?
All my complete shows are on compact disc. $14 a piece, or less if you buy a bunch. Just go to davesgoneby.com. Fully packaged, and they make a nice gift, too.
Well, my depression has cleared.
Great!
But not my psychosis. What chicken is this?
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. On this episode, where we are remembering Marlon Brando. One of his most indelible performances was in the Francis Ford Coppola film Apocalypse Now. It was a relatively minor role. He shows up in just the last third of the film, playing crackpot Colonel Kurtz, a brilliant strategist and soldier who has allowed the jungle and the moral quagmire of Vietnam to turn him into a kind of sacred monster. Now, a lot of the dialogue in Brando's scenes was not in the original script by John Milius and Coppola. Some bits were lifted from Joseph Conrad. The rest were often left to Brando to improvise. So in the film, you get classic lines like, the horror, and you're an errand boy sent by grocery clerks to collect the bill, and they call me an assassin. What do you call it when the assassins accuse the assassins? Great stuff. And Apocalypse Now remains an astonishing but flawed masterpiece. In fact, early last year, Coppola reissued the film in a director's cut with extra footage. But most of the restored film involved Willard, the Martin Sheen character, and not Kurtz. Coppola had wanted to shoot some new scenes, but Brando was too old and too far gone at that point to play Kurtz again. So the director actually considered getting someone else to play the role, figuring that with enough mumbling and makeup, the audience wouldn't notice. A casting call went out to a real-life, hard-edged military man to give Kurtz even stronger authenticity. Nothing came of it, but we do have the dailies of what might have been, including the screen test of none other than Donald Rumsfeld. The current Secretary of State was very much in the running for the role. He had the look, the presence, the air of disgust mixed with madness, and he was doing great until the ad-lib dialogue, and then it got a little frightening. In fact, I have here some quotes from the scenes Rumsfeld was in. He's doing his best, but you'll see what I mean. Here are a dozen or so quotes from Apocalypse Now Redux with Donald Rumsfeld as Colonel Kurtz.
The horror? What horror? I don't see any horror. There's nothing I detest more than the stench of lies, but I kind of like the smell of oil. You have no right to judge me. That's why we give you a front seat at press briefings. I'm sorry, but bows and arrows do constitute weapons of mass destruction. You must make a friend of horror, because horror has a face, and the face belongs to Helen Thomas. Beheadings are just another form of shooting. A messier form, but let's not split semantics. If you do them clean, it's like popping the top off a beer can. Or a shrimp. We went to inoculate the children, and we accidentally bombed a hospital. And that's when it struck me. People get hurt in war sometimes. We train young men to drop fire on people, but we don't allow Howard Stern to say penis on the radio. This makes perfect sense to me. One day I watched the president try to shave with a straight razor. I saw the razor trailing along the line of his neck, leaving little red nicks and bumps, but he survived. Next day, I bought him an electric. You're just an errand boy, sent by grocery clerks to collect a bill. Yes, I'm talking to you, Dan Rather. If a tiger attacks, that's a yellow alert. If Charlie attacks, that's a red alert. If they bomb the oil fields, call up the reserves and reinstate the draft. I believe what I said yesterday. I don't know what I said, but I know what I think, and, well, I assume it's what I said.
This is the end, beautiful friend.
We know there are known knowns. There are things we know. We also know there are known unknowns. That is to say, we know there are some things we do not know, but there are also unknown unknowns. The ones we don't know, we don't know.
Of everything that stands the end, no safety or surprise the end. I'll never look into your eyes again.
Yeah, I think we get the reason why Donald Rumsfeld's footage never made it into the revised cut of Apocalypse Now. And by the way, you know the scariest part of that last sketch? I cheated just a little. The last two quotes were actually said verbatim in real life by Donald Rumsfeld. The horror, indeed. We'll be back after this.
Get up, get up.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. Thanks for joining me in the neighborhood. Before we call it a night on this episode, which I hope you agree not only could have been, but turned out to be a contender, first I have to thank my darling wife for treating me like a Superman and filling my streetcar with desire. Oh man, that was desperate. Oh, and I got an email from Jamie DeRoy, cabaret entertainer and producer of note. She was a guest on our show a couple of months ago talking about nightclubs and cabaret venues and how the whole scene has changed between the 1950s and today. Well, it turns out Jamie's as much a theater maven as she is a cabaret mainstay. Jamie writes, quote, "I hope you get a chance to catch Broadway, The Golden Age. I produced it." What Jamie is talking about is a documentary about the Great White Way in the middle part of the last century. It's called Broadway, The Golden Age, and features interviews with many legendary writers and performers sharing their anecdotes, preserving their memories. Jamie co-produced the film, which is now making the art house circuit, and it's playing in two theaters in Manhattan, the City Cinemas on Sutton Place and in the East Village. Jamie says, quote, "There are tons of fabulous interviews and rare footage of Marlon Brando, among other clips that you'll enjoy." So, congratulations, Jamie. The movie has been getting rave reviews and been winning awards all over the country. They're planning a Christmas release on DVD with extra footage, and they're already working on a sequel called Broadway, The Next Generation, which looks at performers, writers, designers, and producers who came to the fore in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. Anyway, always great to hear back from people who have been on this program, but you don't have to have been a guest on Dave's Gone By to write to me and maybe get your letter on the air. If you're a fan, if you're not a fan, all it takes is a minute or two and a click of an email button to let me know what you want me to know. Dave's Gone By at AOL.com. Dave's Gone By, no apostrophe, at AOL.com. Or get in touch the old-fashioned way. Snail mail to Box 62, Hewlett, New York, 11557-0062. The energy I put into this program grows exponentially based on the feedback I get from you. Although a little boost from my sponsors doesn't hurt either. So thank you, Total Theater, publishers of Performing Arts Insider Theater Guide. Listen next week for more of Inside Broadway. Hewlett, Minuteman Press, 1315 Broadway in Hewlett, for copying and printing and binding and engraving and kayaking and goulash extracting, 516-569-5577. And if you don't want 10% off, don't tell them you heard about it on my show. Oh, and if you do eat at the Tondora Grill, 222 Sunrise Highway in Rockville Center, if you do go for their chicken or lamb or fish appetizers, don't tell them you heard them on Dave's Gone By, or else they're going to give you 10% off the bill also. Man, all these people trying to give you money back. Good thing I'm here to warn you about that. 10% off at both Hewlett Minuteman Press and the Tandoor Grill restaurant. See the menu at tandoorgrill.com. Not tandoori, tandoor. Leave off the last I for India Delicious. And thank you to a whole bunch of people at the radio station. Bonnie D. Graham, host of Long Island's Dating for Singles, 6 p.m. on Fridays. Mr. Redman, hosting the Redman Music Show, Saturday nights, 7:30 to 9. From 9 to 10 on Saturdays, it's the tag team comedy of the Mikey and Jimmy Show. And starting July 13th, a brand new program you can hear on Tuesday nights at 9, The Instrumental Invasion. Kind of a forbidding title there, but it's actually going to be a very mellow show. Smooth jazz, light sounds, hosted by Mike Shimeri. A full hour every Tuesday at 9 on GBB. I wish Mike best of luck with the show, The Instrumental Invasion. And speaking of invasions, I will be invading Joe Salzone's space for the next 2 weeks. No, nothing that kinky. Joe is on vacation for the month of July, and he asked me to guest host his program, Your World, with Joe Salzone, which airs Sundays at 7 p.m. So, you know, I thought about it for roughly 2 seconds and said, yes, I'd love to. And that's where I will be the next 2 Sundays, July 11th and 18th. It won't be Dave's Gone By. It will be a political talk show. I think Joe will even be calling in this Sunday to talk about the John Edwards VP appointment. So he'll be there in spirit, but it'll be me at the reins, at the mic, Sunday at 7 for a full hour. And I will actually be the engineer at the station that night. I'll be running the board from like 7 o'clock till midnight. I won't be on the air the whole time. There's a bunch of different shows that night. But you might hear me do a few station IDs, and if there's a free half hour somewhere, I might play some music or open the phone lines. So be with me Sunday, and be with me next Thursday, also at 7 o'clock, July 15th, for the next edition of Dave's Gone By. It will be our 85th show. Maybe I'll have a guest, maybe I won't. You'll just have to tune in to find out. Until then, don't miss your days going by. This is Dave Lefkowitz. Good night. Get the bugger. And gone by.
Yeah.